Welcome to Off the Chart with Medical Economics, a podcast featuring lively and informative conversations with healthcare experts, opinion leaders, and practicing physicians about the challenges facing doctors in medical practices today. I'm Jeff Bendix, Senior Editor of Medical Economics. Health technology, from EHRs to telehealth, plays a major role in a physician's day-to-day work and can have a major impact on a medical practice's operations and profitability. Our new president, Joe Biden, has some plans for health IT in the coming years. To learn more about those plans and what they mean for physicians, I spoke recently with the man President Biden appointed to implement them, Dr. Mickey Tripathi, the National Coordinator for Health IT. Dr. Tripathi has over 20 years' experience in health IT, and most recently served as Chief Alliance Officer for Arcadia, a healthcare data and software company focused on population health management and value-based care. Thanks for joining us today, Dr. Tripathi.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
I know we don't have much time, so I'm gonna dive right in and start by asking you, what are your top two or three priorities for ONC?
I kind of divide it up into two categories. One is the immediate priorities with respect to the pandemic that we're in. And those are, you know, really related to trying to help wherever we can with very specific things like scheduling. For example, we're trying to do some work on trying to improve the scheduling experience that individuals have. Not that we can, you know, sort of redo everything that's been done, but we're trying to help get the industry forward to make some small improvements in the scheduling experience so that vaccination scheduling gets easier. And we're also doing a lot of work in public health. So we're working on an executive order in partnership with the CDC, looking at evaluation of public health data systems and evaluating what we've learned through the pandemic, and then making some recommendations about the future. And then we have, you know, sort of the regular stuff that ONC does, which is already a full plate. First and foremost, interoperability. So we have a couple of dimensions to that. One is information blocking. And we just, as you may know, the applicability date for the information blocking rule came and went on April 5th. So we're doing a lot to help to educate the industry, answer questions, do whatever we can to help the industry move forward on that. We also have TEFCA, which is the Trusted Exchange Framework and Cooperative Agreements, I think I got that right, which is the nationwide interoperability governance, and that's a big piece of it as well. And then the final thing I would add, doing a lot of work on social determinants of health and in disparities, and how can we think better, deeper, more broadly, you know, being able to enable health information technology to both identify as well as help to solve disparities in healthcare that exist today.
I don't usually think of health information technology as having a role in that. Can you talk a little more detail about what form that would take?
So very first, you know, sort of a step in that may not be obvious is that in order for us to be able to measure, to even know how we're doing with respect to health equity and health disparities, you've got to be able to measure it. And you can't measure it unless you're capturing the right data on demographics of individuals, so that you're able to say, how am I doing, you know, once I stratify it according to different demographic types of characteristics. And so that's, you know, fundamental to health information technology, because you've got to be able to have that data captured in an electronic health record system, say, and have it be structured in a way that, you know, you can aggregate it and then run the kind of analytics that you want to be able to do to be able to divide it up and then be able to understand if minoritized, marginalized, underserved communities are getting disparate care compared to other groups. So that's just the first step. And you'd like to ultimately, you need analytics to be able to do that. So that's health information technology. And then ideally you want to be able to provide decision support or tools back to providers and other frontline people who are using those systems to be able to help them, you know, sort of take actions, you know, when there are areas that are identified. So all of that is, you know, things that that are in health information technology. I mean, it's hard to actually imagine things actually in provider settings right now that doesn't somehow implicate health information technology.
I want to go back for a minute to the Cures Act. You referenced it. ONC said in its announcement that its initial focus is going to be on the elements in the core data for interoperability, like transitions of care and clinical information reconciliation. Why are you focusing just on those elements, at least at the beginning?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. So so information blocking covers the broader category of information called EHI, or electronic health information, which is the electronic pieces of the designated record set, which is something that's defined in HIPAA, those pieces of it that are electronic. And so that's what the 21st Century Cures Act said is electronic health information, EHI, which is basically everything that you and I might have at in a provider's office, assuming that they have implemented an electronic health record and whatever has been migrated into an electronic form. And so information blocking covers all of that. But we recognize that it's really hard to just flip the switch overnight and say that all of that should be made available on demand. When we haven't been doing that, that isn't a common practice and systems aren't set up to be able to do that. Provider organizations don't have workflows for that. And so we realized that that's a complicated thing to do. So what we did is we said, let's focus at the beginning on what we call the US CDI or the US core data for interoperability, which every certified EHR system is already required to be able to generate either in the form of a continuity of care document or soon in a FHIR API, if you've heard the term FHIR. Right. And so that's why we said, those things are already available. We know for sure they're available because providers have already been required to exchange those for transition of care, for example. So why don't we start with those and we'll call that EHI for the first 18 months. And then after 18 months, hopefully everyone is now, sort of understanding information blocking, they're understanding the workflows, and it also prepare them for how are they going to open it up beyond those data sets.
Pulling back a little bit to the issue of interoperability generally, on a scale of 0 to 10, with 0 being no ability to send or receive patient data, and 10 being the ability to do it as easily as most of us today send and receive emails, where would you say the health system falls right now?
Well, it depends on what it is you're doing and what health system you're in. So I have to qualify that as a response to that one, right? But for example, if you are in an academic medical center, let's say, and you're on a fully certified EHR system that's connected up to Commonwealth or Care Quality or the Health Exchange, that data, that exchange is actually happening in the background already millions and millions of times a day across the country. And that's a full continuity of care document. That's not just, and so the continuity of care document contains the US CDI that we were just talking about, which is 24, 25 data elements. If you're not familiar with it, it's, if you and I sat down and said, what do we think are the basic data elements that a physician should be able to have access to on any given day for any given patient, you and I would come up with pretty much what's the US CDI. It's problems, allergies, meds, dates of encounters, most recent lab results, all of that. So that's exchanged in those systems today. So it doesn't even require effort. If you talk to a provider organization in a large system, they'll just see the data is coming in the background. Often they don't realize that it's come in from other places. It just appears overnight because these systems are automated. Similarly, if you're on any system and you want to be able to do e-prescribing, you do electronic prescribing is just sort of out of the box, capability out of EHR systems. You can get medication histories, all of that, and you can get it in a very automated way that's very familiar now to most individuals. So I think it depends on what you're talking about. If we're talking about the ability to in any setting be able to get a record for in almost any place, if you're on like a small vendor, for example, that isn't connected up to one of these nationwide networks, then there's going to be a gap there. The last thing I would say is, we're never going to feel like we're at a 10 because just like, you and I, when we first got our iPhones, right? Or whenever our cell phones were, if you think back to when your first one was, it was pretty primitive, right? But we were pretty happy with it. Like we thought, whoa, this is the coolest thing in the world. And if we went back then and said, am I satisfied with that? It'd be absolutely not. That is horrible. It's terrible. In the same way today, right? I can tell you 10 things that I want this phone to do that it doesn't do right now. So I'm just like with interoperability, we're always going to be wanting more, right? The next thing is going to be, what about genetic information? What about, this other kind of information? What about algorithms? How come we don't have those? So I don't want to pretend that there are problems and gaps. There certainly are problems and gaps. But I think it really just depends on the use case.
As you know, doctors complain a lot that electronic health records are designed more as clinical and billing tools than for their ability to improve clinical care. Is there anything that ONC can do to change that?
We're very sensitive to that, and we completely appreciate that that, you know, that clinician burden from health information technology is a huge issue. And so, you know, we've worked on a clinician burden report, and we've done, you know, a lot of work and continue to have a program looking at burden issues that come from the health information technology itself, as well as things that are pushed through the health information technology. Because one of the things that I think all of us have started to understand as we think about these systems is that a lot of what physicians feel as burden from the system is sometimes about the health information technology system. It's sometimes about things that other organizations are pushing through the system that they didn't do before. So more documentation requirements, for example, for, you know, for billing, for example, other types of requirements that start to get pushed through. And then the electronic health record kind of gets blamed for that when it's actually just a vehicle for things that, you know, that couldn't have been done in a paper world and are now being pushed through that system. So we work a lot with our partners at CMS. There is a, you know, there's an Office of Clinician Burden at CMS, and we partner with them and do a lot of work to, you know, sort of continually try to understand what are the, you know, what are these burden issues and what are the ones, how can we reduce those through better usability and through reduction of some of those requirements to the extent that those requirements are unnecessary, because some of them aren't really necessary or they are very cumbersome, because what naturally happens in these kinds of transitions is you take a paper process and then you just try to ram it through an electronic system. And it wasn't designed for that. If you said, you know what, this is an electronic system, we should think of it natively, electronically, we could probably take better advantage of the electronic tools that we have. So I think there's some of that transition as well. But we do what we can to both highlight those through our program on clinician burden. We have a whole clinical team who are physicians who do that. We also have usability as a part of, you know, certification that vendors are supposed to go through a usability process. And then we also have things like, that's also a part of EHR certification as well, that we are in the next generation are requiring real world testing, which is to say that, you know, these systems ought to be tested in real world environments so that it starts to surface those things rather than just testing them, you know, sort of in a laboratory as it were, which as we know, just like with drugs, there's a big difference between testing something in the lab and then testing it out, you know, in the real world with real people using the systems.
Is usability another term for user friendliness?
Yeah, I'm not a computer UI expert or UX expert, but I think that a UX expert might say they're not exactly the same, but it is very similar to the idea of user friendliness, as well as, you know, does it have the kind of functions that you want to be able to perform?
Is there any evidence that EHR manufacturers are putting more emphasis on usability, on user friendliness now than they were 5 or 10 years ago?
I think there is. I think that if you look at what they do, you know, and vendors are a very heterogeneous set of vendors, right? So it's hard to, you know, sort of say, right, that, you know, this is true for every vendor. But I think vendors have big usability programs, and they have clinicians, you know, they have physicians on staff, and they have programs where they apply usability science, because there is a whole science around, you know, around this as well, with human factors design, things like that, as well as, you know, sort of input from the field and from clinicians themselves who are using the systems. So I think it is very much on their minds. You know, again, it varies a lot by vendor. I think it's hard for, you know, any individual, you know, who sometimes feels frustrated by the system, they may feel like this system isn't usable. That doesn't necessarily mean there hasn't been usability considerations, you know, behind the system. It's just that it's a complex system and maybe it can't be, you know, sort of perfect for everyone, right? I think that's, you know, that's a part of the challenge. But I will, you know, just add two things. One is that systems don't get better without people using them and providing that feedback, right? That's true for everything. Again, even if we think of the most usable systems that we have, like iPhones or, you know, or Android phones, whatever they are, it isn't as if software engineers sitting in a room by themselves can design a perfect system or a, you know, even a really good system. What they need is to be able to put those in the field and then get constant feedback from users. And I think as we're maturing, we're starting to see that those systems are better. The second thing I would just point out is that the whole move toward APIs, which a lot of physicians may not, you know, sort of be that familiar with, but the whole idea of APIs and FHIR APIs, which are now required by ONC regulations, is that you ought to be able with your EHR to be able to download apps and use apps on your EHR, just like you do on your phone. And if you think about the beauty of that on your phone is that when you open an app, it's usable in ways that you want it to be, right? That's why you downloaded that app. You said, oh, I like this app. I like, you know, Uber over Lyft, or I like Evernote over, you know, over OneNote. And you're able to sort of choose that and design it for things that are about your preferences. And that's what apps and the whole API world, sort of promises as well. That if you're sitting in your EHR system, you want to be able to have a set of apps that don't lock you into that EHR system. If you have a different way of doing something, you can do that through an app as well. So I think that's a really important part of usability that may not be obvious to a lot of people, but it is going to be what's coming over the next couple of years as apps and APIs start to mature.
Does ONC have the ability to sort of nudge EHR manufacturers in that direction and make sure that they're following through on that?
Absolutely. So our regulations, the information blocking rule and the corresponding EHR certification rule requires that that the vendors make available and that the providers make those available through those vendor solutions, FHIR APIs, and those FHIR APIs according to a particular specification, and those are supposed to be open APIs so that apps from the outside can connect to those without special effort, were the words that we used in the 21st Century Cures Act. And there's a whole set of regulations that there's a whole set of provisions that are part of that regulation to make sure that that's a fair playing field. So that, you know, you don't have vendors trying to close out things that they see as competitive or that create too many burdens for a provider to be able to get an app onto their system if they choose to.
Providers will find that very welcome.
Yeah, I think so. I hope so. It'll take a little while for it to get in place, but the regulations are in place. There are fixed and well-defined dates that the vendors and the providers are required to, you know, to meet. And I think that's, you know, that's the hope, is that we create platforms, that these things should be platforms that you can have apps on of your choosing. And hopefully that makes it a better experience for everyone.
Well, we'll be watching all this develop with a lot of interest. Dr. Tripathi, thanks. Thanks Great. Very much for joining us.
Thank you. Really enjoyed it.
Thanks for listening. You can subscribe to our podcasts on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, and Spotify. And when you do, please leave a review. You can find previous podcast episodes on our website, medicaleconomics.com, under the Media tab. We welcome your comments and suggestions for future podcast topics. You can email these to us at medec@mjhlifesciences.com. And while visiting our website, be sure to check out the latest news about the business of healthcare and explore the many other resources you'll find there. We hope you'll listen next month for a new episode of Off the Chart with Medical Economics.